Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. German forester Peter Wohlleben is our guest this hour. His book is a huge bestseller in Germany and in the United States and probably soon all over the world. He's the author of The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World. He said early in his career he knew about as much about the hidden life of trees as a butcher knows about the emotional life of animals. He saw trees as a forester who was looking at how the lumber industry could use the trees. But 20 years ago, he began organizing survival training and log cabin tours for tourists, and they marveled at the majestic trees and had him seeing trees in a new light and rekindling his own childhood love of nature. Also, scientists were beginning to conduct research in his forest, and so he no longer saw trees as currency. He saw them as the living wonders they are. And the book is really interesting. It looks at how trees experience pain, have memories, that tree parents live together with their children, so you can no longer just chop them down and disrupt their lives with large machines, he believes. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Peter. I'm sure many of you have read about the book, and many of you have read the book. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, where we always love to read your comments. And we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Peter, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Peter. Really great to have you here. So let's talk about early in your career. You were managing a forest. You were thinking in terms of the trees as providing lumber, right?
Right. That's what a forester should do. A forester is not supposed to be environmentalist, but a producer of raw material. And sometimes people misunderstand that and think foresters are something like a tree keeper. And I misunderstood that too when I was a young man.
Mm-hmm. So it did change when you began organizing these trips, when you would bring people through the forest and they saw trees in a different light. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We have a very old forest, which is about 4,000 years old.
And, wow.
This one should be felled completely and replaced by Douglas fir. And then I tried to save this forest by changing it to a burial forest. And the people there could be buried in urns, and they may choose a very old beech tree as a headstone. And then the people came out and said, okay, they had to choose a tree and said, oh, this tree is bended. That's very nice, because my life was also not very straight. And I thought, what a bad tree, ugly. You couldn't sell that to a sawmill for much money. So for a forester, that tree looked ugly. And then I had to train my view once again, sharpen my eyes once again, and then I saw the wonders and the beauty, beautiness of trees, really.
Mm-hmm. 4,000 years old. That's really old.
Yeah, that's really old, and that we found out that by incident, because there were geological research being done for this burial forest, and there you have to research how deep you can dig for the urns. And then the geologists found out that there was really untouched soil for thousands of years, and that means that this soil was always covered by woodland. And that means the beech trees came back after the last ice age for about 4,000 years ago, and therefore this forest is this old. But we had other research done. For example, we found little bugs which are not able to fly, because in a primeval forest you don't need to fly, because the condition never changes within thousands of years. So these little bugs are not able to fly. And when you once clear-cut such a forest, it's away, those little bugs will die out and will never come back, because they have to walk. And they are just very little, just 1 or 2 millimeters in length. So it would last, I think, centuries to come up for just 1 kilometer.
Hmm. You talk in the book about how slowly trees grow, and that slow growth when a tree is young is a prerequisite if a tree is to live to a ripe old age.
Yeah. Youth of a tree is about 200 or 300 years. So a young tree has to be very patient. And that is, you're right, that it may become very, very old. The trees in our forest plantations are forced to grow very fast because one wants to have a big profit out of it. And that means that you will harvest them at least after 100 years. And the mother tree brings its children, we can really say its children, to grow very slow by reducing the light by making shade with its leaves about 3% down off the sunlight, so that the little tree is nearly to die, and that it's will not die. The mother tree suckle its children via root connection and supporting them so that they can remain for the next centuries in a very low growth.
Mm. You talk about trees suckling their children, and you do use the trees, the analogy, in very human forms. It's kind of hard to imagine a tree suckling its children. It causes us to think about a tree in a whole new way, doesn't it?
Yeah, really. But I think usually we are used to that, for example, scientists use a very dry speech because that seems to be correct. But humans are working with emotions, working on emotions, perhaps more than 90%. When you're, I think, all the emotions out of a speech, then it's a non-human speech. And no one, that's the main reason, I think, why no one wants to read scientific reports and why they are so boring. And but on the other hand, there are so brilliant new research being done and so such amazing discoveries. But I think everyone should know that. And so I translated those scientific reports. I mixed it up with my own findings. And we have research being done here from the University of Aachen, here in my own forest district. And this whole mixture gives a new picture of trees. And they, to me, they look now like something like a plant elephant, like a wonderful being, a very big being with social possibilities, with family bands, and, with feelings.
Mm. Here you were, this forester in Germany. Probably your family knew about you and people in the forestry business knew about you, but you wrote about this, and all of a sudden, Peter, you're this international bestseller. That came out of the blue, didn't it, or through the wind in the trees?
For me, that was really a big surprise. perhaps even because I never want to write a book. I'm not an author. I'm a forester, and I always make guiding tours since 25 years. And the people have always asked, "Where can we read more about it?" And my wife tried to convince me to write up at least 10 pages or so, and I always refuse and say, no, I don't like to write anything. I want to tell people. And then I gave up my resistance some years ago. And that was in we were on holiday in Lapland, northern Sweden, in a forest, mm-hmm. where else. And then I wrote a little book and said, okay, I send it to several publishers, and if no one wants to have it, that's it. Yeah, then you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, everybody wanted to have it, that's for sure. You tell the story early in the book, and I'd like for you to repeat it, about the wolves disappearing from the world's first national park in the 1920s, which happened to be Yellowstone.
Yeah, right. I think that's a nice story because there one can see how complex an ecosystem works. The wolves were rotten out by rangers, by farmers, and so I think 70 years or so there were no wolves in Yellowstone, and that means that for example, the deers spread, the population rose, and they feed up every little tree. So, and they feed up the grass so that the rivers may made bigger erosions, and the whole valleys changed. And then the wolves came back, and they hunted deer. The population came down a little bit, but what was much more important, the deer changed their strategies. They moved up away from the rivers up to the mountains, so that the riversides recover. The forests came back. Beavers came back. There were more berries, for example, for the bears, and the whole ecosystem changed. And with those changes, even more bird species came back. And that's all just because there are not so many wolves in Yellowstone, but because just of their appearance, the whole ecosystem changed.
Mm. So when you ask the question or answer the question, why forests matter on a global scale, that gives us one indication of why they do matter. Are there other reasons forests matter on a global scale?
Yeah. Besides their amazing abilities, forests are something like water ponds. For example, in the Amazon region, they found out that everyone perhaps knows it from newspapers that in the Amazon region there are more and more droughts, heavy droughts in summertime. Mm-hmm. And scientists wondered what's the reason for that. And then I think it was where Russian scientists found out that it was the felling of the coastal rainforest. And this forest is working like a water pump. For example, when rain is falling in a forest, then afterwards there are new clouds rising up, and they are transported more to the inner land and rain down. And when there's a forest again, the water will rise up, dense up again, and there will be clouds. And so the water will be transported more and more away from the coast in the inner land. And when you remove the first forest within the first, let's say, 400 miles within the coastal range, then this complex structure will break down and you will have heavy droughts in the inner of the continent.
Hmm. Why haven't we acted accordingly with that knowledge? Why have we done just what we shouldn't have done?
Pardon? Sorry?
Why did we not do that? Why did we cut down those trees and do the very opposite of what would have prevented drought?
Yeah, I think it's perhaps because of lack of knowledge. That's on the one hand. And on the other hand, we always want to have the business to grow nowadays. We want to have more raw material. We want to have higher standards of living. And let's say 7 billion people are too much for this little planet. And that doesn't mean that we have to reduce the population, but with this high standard of living, it's not possible to have it sustainable. And but we try to do so. For example, in the moment we are replacing coal and oil with biomass, for example, wood. There are really big clear cuts in southeastern USA for producing pellets, those little chips for power plants in Europe to replace coal with wood, and therefore producing eco power, which isn't really eco power, which causes those heavy losses of woodland in the USA. And that's a crazy thing going on with nature protection in the moment.
Mm. So what should we be doing in that regard?
I think we should reduce our consumption in every way. I think what's really important for us, we all have enough to eat, we all have a warm home, but do we really need two cars for each family? Do we really have to travel all over the world? Or may we reduce it to the real values? And then let's see what the trees are doing. The real values are the family, the social network, and that's not depending on how much money you earn.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for you. I know many people are aware of your book and will want to contribute and speak with you. We're speaking with the author of The Hidden Life of Trees this hour, What They Feel, How They Communicate. German forester Peter Lieben is our guest, and He wrote this book, you know, here, I just think it's remarkable. He's a German forester who was cutting down trees for the lumber industry, using trees in forests the way that we've traditionally used them. When he started organizing these log cabin tours and survival training and saw the forest through different eyes, the people who had come there, and has simultaneous with this, there was a lot of research going on about forests and about trees, and some pretty remarkable things have been discovered about trees, and we'll get into some of that in a moment, how they help each other through their root systems, which is called a world wood web, how they're very social. Trees are very social. They share food with their own species, how they grow and make room for other trees. It's pretty remarkable. So if you want to join the conversation, we would love to hear from you. Peter would too, I'm sure. He's joining us by Skype from Germany this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. And we start with Leslie in Rhinelander. Hello, Leslie.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Go
ahead. All right, this is, I've got his book, and I actually heard him last week. I do a lot of humanitarian work all over the world, and one of the big things is forestry systems and agroforestry. And one of the scientific evidence, and I'm sure he'd like to talk about this, is this relationship, this complex relationship, not only between the different species of trees, but also the mycorrhizal fungi underneath the soil and the complex relationship between the trees, the root system, and the exchange of carbohydrates and nutrients that feeds the entire system, the whole soil system and other plants, and can actually extend out for miles. This is a pretty sophisticated system that he's talking about. So this is fantastic that you've got him on the air, and I'll leave it at that.
Thank you so much for the call, Leslie. Peter.
Yeah, this system is really fantastic. But I don't think that the trees are really want to feed the rest of the ecosystem, but I think the fungi does. They are not always doing what they should do. They should transport, for example, sugar solution from one tree to another, and they get paid for that, service. They get up to one third of the photosynthesis production. But the fungi network has its own strategy. For example, they have to rely on any plant because they are not able to feed themselves. So they are, well, let's say, thinking, why just supporting trees of one species and not having a plan B? For example, when those trees are attacked by insects and die, then the fungi network will die too. And therefore, it's always best to have a second alternative. For example, that may be another tree species, that may be grass, that may be brushes, whatsoever. And therefore, this fungi network is supporting also other plants.
Hmm. Is that what you call the world wood web?
The wood wide web, yeah, the wood wide web. That's really interesting because trees are transporting news first via their own root connections, but they are not reaching so far, so they use this fungi network, which is growing all through the soil. For example, one teaspoon full of soil contains perhaps several miles of filaments of fungi. And within those filaments, there are news being transported, even electrical, like our internet. And so, for example, the trees warn each other from insect attacks. Trees are very, very slow, and they need for preparing themselves hours, sometimes days. And that's too slow for fast insects. So they are warning each other. They get the news much earlier, perhaps hours or days before the insects arrive, and they may prepare. Cool. Or they warn each other from heavy droughts. The trees which are standing on drier soil, they recognize it first, and then warn their companions, and so they can reduce their water consumption and save a little water in the soil for the next drought.
Let's go back to insects for a moment. They can also emit some kind of substances that will keep, I think there was a study done in the savannas where giraffes were eating the leaves of trees, wasn't it giraffes? And the trees figured this out, and then they emitted something that kept the giraffes from eating their leaves.
Yeah, right. There were two substances discovered. One is the chemical benz, which is spread out so that the other trees are getting aware of the giraffes. And the second substance is a poison, which is pumped into the leaves and which makes it dangerous for the giraffes to feed more on this special tree. So the giraffes are always just feeding some minutes on one special tree and then moving to the next one, which has not gotten the news. For example, they are moving against the wind, and these trees are, no less. They don't know anything about the giraffes, and there the giraffes can keep on feeding.
Joe sends this email. In the winter, I've noticed that mature trees in the forest do not seem to grow into each other, even though they're growing right next to each other. They don't have branches intertwine or even touch. They seem to grow up to and around each other. What is the mechanism for this?
It's depending on tree species. For example, conifers, they are wiping off their branches when they are bending in the wind. And that is just a mechanical thing. But deciduous trees, they may grow into each other, and they do so sometimes, but when they are befriended, when they are really, when they close friendship, then they care for each other, and then they grow with their thick branches away from each other, and they combine their root system. They grow so strong together that when you, for example, cut one of those trees, the other one will die too, like an old couple where the remaining says, okay, it doesn't make any sense to live anymore, and then dies too.
Mm. Do trees take care of their own, or do they take care of trees that aren't in their family?
That is so far not exactly being researched, because we don't know how big tree families are. After the last ice age, they came back to the north, and I think many of the trees of one species are related, are strongly related or less related, and trees are able to discover which tree belongs to the family and which not. So it's not exactly to be said if trees of one species are all working together or if it is just in very big family bands.
Mm. Peter, which trees are very, very social and which trees are loners, if there is such a thing?
Yeah, there are such things. For example, beech trees, oak trees, Douglas fir, they are very social. They are known to live in family bands. For example, they have mother trees. The old mother trees are take actively care for the children. They suckle, as I said. They teach them to grow slow, to grow straight. They may even pass memories to them. They are really social for centuries. But on the other hand, we have birch trees. Those birch trees are used to live on their own, and they have a very quick start in their life. They, in the first 100 years, they have their whole lifespan. They grow as fast as that they, for example, will be mature after 5 years, and that's nothing for a tree. But after 100 years, they are exhausted, and perhaps after 150 years, they will die. And they are used to live on their own because they settle on new land. And when there are is another tree beneath those birch trees, then they will wipe off with their branches the crown of the neighbor trees. We have it in our garden. We have a Douglas fir and a birch standing beside each other. And you can see the crown shape of the birch smashed into the crown of the Douglas fir, and there, in this shape of the birch tree, the Douglas fir has lost its crown.
Mm. Let's go back to something you just said, because I'm having a hard time having this sink in. Trees can pass memories?
That's just a very new research, and that's also there are no strong data so far. But trees have memories, and that's perhaps the first surprising thing. For example, it is known that apple trees can count. They can count the warm days in spring because even the tree doesn't know if it is really spring. It can feel the longer days, the warmer days, mm-hmm. but is it really spring? Or maybe become a very harsh frost afterwards, and then the young leaves will die, and so the tree has to rebuild them again, and therefore sometimes it has not enough power. So it's waiting and counting the warm days, and just as if there's a certain amount of warm days, then the tree will build up its new leaves, and that causes two things. The tree is able to count, and it must have memories, because otherwise it will count every day one. And every day, just one again. So if you really want to count day after day, you have to have a memory. Mm. And it is known that trees can remember heavy droughts. For example, in the year 2003, we had a heavy drought here in Germany. And afterwards, you could see that trees which suffered from it, and that is very painful for trees, because when they dry out, the wood cracks, and that hurts really, really much. Afterwards, the year after, the tree will change its water management and doesn't drink the whole water in spring, but save a lot of water in the soil for a summer, which maybe become also very dry. And one see that trees in surrounding such trees are also changing its behavior, so that it's the clue is. Yeah, it sounds strong that they pass their memories also to other trees.
Peter Willeben is our guest, and we're talking about The Hidden Life of Trees, just published and became a wonderful bestseller, first in Germany and now really all over the world. Our number is 800-486-8655 if you'd like to join this conversation, 800-486-8655. Elizabeth in Greenfield, hi.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm fascinated on the subject of trees. Now, I live in an apartment on the third floor, and I see this beautiful willow tree. It's huge, and there are three trunks growing out of the original trunk. And I'm wondering, will that one lose its leaves in the winter? And my question about that one, and then just a comment about trees in general. Trees are just, it makes me very sad if I see trees that have to come down. So I'm hoping that one and the other trees here on the property stay healthy.
I hope so too, yeah. Elizabeth. Peter, what do you say?
I don't understand the first question. There are three trunks coming out of the same stem, and what are they doing with their leaves? I couldn't understand that acoustic.
Oh, yeah. There's one, there's a big, the big trunk, and then there, yeah. You just go maybe 5 feet higher. There's yeah. another trunk on each side.
And a tree does this because usually when it grows in a primeval forest, its mother tree would prevent it from growing so fast. And then trees in parks or in our cities are loners. They grow up without mother trees, so they think they are adult. And just when you are an adult tree, you are allowed to build a big crown. And so those little trees build a crown, even though they are not having the affordable height. So the crown begins, let's say, in 10 feet height, the stem will divide into a crown. And that's a typical sign that this tree was not in the shape of a mother tree, but grew up very, very fast and alone.
Oh, thank you very much.
Sorry.
Yeah, and you have some things to say about willow trees in your book, don't you?
Pardon, what? Willow trees?
Willow trees.
Willow trees are also loners, like birch trees, but they have a different strategy, for example, for reproduction. Willows have different sexes. That's not typical for trees. Usually trees are unisex, but willow trees, they are male and female trees, and they have different strategies to get the attractions of bees. Because they are the male trees, they have usually they are blooming yellow. So the bees get attracted by the color, and then afterwards the female tree with its more greenish blossoms, those trees smell better, and so the bee is changing between different trees to do its duty. But usually trees, that's perhaps more interesting, we have it in Germany now, they are really able to communicate over hundreds of kilometers to have seeds at the same time.
That's amazing.
And that's, they are this just doing because they want to get rid of wild pigs or of deer, because they are feeding the seeds. And when you are just blooming every 3 or 5 years, the population of those animals is not able to rise. And so I don't know how this is working. I don't know. I think it's not working via the Wood Wide Web. Perhaps with dances or things we don't know, but you can watch it just now in Germany. But in all over Germany and other countries, the beech trees having seeds all at the same time in billions of tons.
Mm. I want to ask you, because we do have a need for what we get from forests. We need lumber, and I'm wondering, considering what you used to do and what you've done now, what's the best way to have lumber for our needs for building? Do we just build separate forests and have trees grow rapidly and far apart from each other because we're going to use them right away? And the second part of the question is, how damaging have we been to primeval forests?
Yeah. Let me first say that that I'm not against the using of timber. I'm myself heating on with firewood. I think that's okay. And for example, even if you want to eat something for breakfast, you need to have farmland, and there once stood a primeval forest. And I'm happy that we have farmland, because I'm hungry in the morning, and so we have to. But we have to get it in a better balance. You don't need to have plantations on the one hand, on the other hand, reservations. We need reservations because we need some places where trees may live their social life without disturbance. But the managed forests are more profitable when you manage them as close as possible to primeval forests. That means that you use the local tree species, that you list them in the family band. That's a little bit like have an organic farm with animals. The animals are also healthier, and you get more profit from your products when the beings with which you work are healthy. And therefore, we're doing this in my forest district. We have reservations with those old beech tree forests, and we have managed areas where we try to remove step by step the plantations of spruce and pine, which are not common here, replace them, but very slow, with young beech trees, because they need to have shadow, so we use them let's say big umbrellas, the spruce trees, for these little beeches. I think they are not being suckled by the spruces, because they are different species, but so we can make a slow change and get those managed forests closer to primeval forests and get more profit out of it. We get now as 4 times as much as money as before we did the change.
Interesting. Thanks, Elizabeth. Cheryl in Minocqua. Hi.
Hi. I heard you mention something about the tree suffering when it was stressed, and I have property, and occasionally trees fall down and they're still alive, but they're damaged and they need to be cut down. And I would kind of think I'll cut them up when I get around to it, but are they suffering? I mean, should I be doing a mercy killing and cut them up and kill them as soon as possible while they lie there half alive? And are they suffering, I guess, is my question.
Yeah. I think they are suffering. That's right. But I don't know how strong this feeling is, and I don't know, perhaps we may compare them, with disabled. They are disabled trees, and they are suffering, but I don't know what is stronger, the pain or the family bands, which they want to keep. And so what we do in our reservations, we don't touch trees like this. We let them fall down and see what's going on. For example, we have... And there you can see how strong the will to live is on trees. We have an old stump, and this stump is about 400 or 500 years old. This tree has been felled for 400 or 500 years and it's still alive. It's held up by the companions, by the fellows around it. They are supporting it with sugar solution, and perhaps this old fellow is sharing memories with them. We don't know, so we don't disturb this interaction. It's just one reason why those broken trees may be removed is when you need the timber. But for all other purposes, I think I would leave the trees on their own.
Mm. Thank you so much, Cheryl, for your call. This message from Peggy. How would you recommend reforestation projects be done in tropical areas? Tree nurseries have been promoted in deforested areas in the tropics for years. Do giving away trees in tree bags have any value for poor farmers or for the environment?
That's a really difficult question. When you have completely deforested areas where really no forest at all, then any tree is better than no tree. But when you plant a tree or plant it in a container or wheresoever, then the roots get damaged. And in the root tips, there are brain-like structures. With this structure, the tree is orientating, the tree connects with other trees. And when those structures are damaged, when the trees are planted. And so those plantations will never be a completely working social ecosystem. So therefore, it's always better to protect primeval forests. Wherever we have them, they should be protected. And where there aren't any forests anymore, then you're right. It's better to plant a tree than having no tree. But I think a real forest will grow just after 100 or 200 years, when those planted trees become mature and they will reproduce and getting their own families, and then perhaps the next generation will become a real forest. But therefore, we have to be very patient.
The author of The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Peter Wohlleben is our guest. For many years, he's been a forester in Germany. He's joining us by Skype from Germany. And he writes about trees, and we see them in a whole new way as a result of what he has written. He used to see them in the way that many of us still see them, in terms of a forester who is looking at how the lumber industry could use the trees, but now he's seeing them in an entirely different light, and his life as a forester has become exciting once again, and he's also doing forestry in a completely different way. The book looks at, and it's really been a bestseller. He wrote this book, and his wife urged him to write a little bit, so he wrote a few things down, and whammo! It's a huge bestseller in Germany, and then it's a bestseller all over. So he's looking at some very interesting ideas about trees. They're social beings. They share food with their species. They nourish their competitors. They work together. A tree can't do it on its own. A tree is not a forest. They can't establish a consistent local climate. They can live to be very old in a protected environment. It's only as strong as the forest that surrounds it. He writes about trees in love L-O-V-E, and we'll have to talk about that as we carry on. And take more of your phone calls. Our number, a couple lines are open now, 800-486-8655 is the number, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Leave your comments there. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rita in West Salem. Hi, Rita.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for this excellent show. About several years ago, I first heard about tree communication, and it was exciting then. And now that I've heard of this book, I'm going to rush right out and get it. But my question is about a different type of tree, such as the aspen and the cloning idea, and how that communication differs from, say, you know, elm trees or linden trees.
Just to repeat your question, how different species communicate with each other?
Yes, the clone, yeah. That I understand that the aspens are clones from a single tree.
Right. That is a point that is really not being researched, because we don't know so far what a tree really is. Is it the root system? Is it the stem? Is it the crown? Where is the heart, the soul of a tree? My personal opinion is that it's mostly the root system. And when it is really the root system, then it is really just one giant tree with, several bearers of solar cells, if you want to say that stems or the crown are something like that. And the root system is in reality a giant tree which is growing in the underground.
Thank you so much for your call. You even have a chapter in your book on love, and it goes this way. This is how you begin: at the leisurely pace at which trees live their lives is also apparent when it comes to procreation. Reproduction is planned at least a year in advance.
Right. Trees are very slow, and therefore you can say they have to prepare really 1 year in advance. Many people say, when there are many seeds, for example, beechnuts, then it's going to be a strong winter. And that's not true, because the trees doesn't know 1 year in advance how the next winter, the next year will be. How slow trees are. There may be a good comparison when you see that an electrical signal, which is really a speedy thing in a tree, needs for one centimeter some seconds up to some minutes, and that's the fastest thing a tree can do. To close a wound, a tree will need years, and therefore the preparation for reproduction 1 year in advance is a really fast thing for a tree.
Let's go to Gloria in Shawano. Hi, Gloria.
Hi. I just have a little bit of a story. It's about some trees that got cut down. We have some friends in northern Wisconsin that had bought a new house. And in their front yard, there was a beautiful stand, randomly planted. It wasn't like a plantation, of red pines that were absolutely gorgeous. And the people decided that these trees were messy. And I didn't know they were going to do it, but they cut them down, and I got there. It was either the day they had done it or after. And I have never forgotten this, and I don't think I ever will. The land was screaming. It was just screaming. And it did this for a whole year. It was very hard to go to the house because that land was so upset.
What do you mean? What was it doing?
It was It wasn't a noise, but the land was screaming. I just can't describe it. And it did this for a whole year. The second year, it was like it was very sad and depressed and weeping. And the people are trying to landscape it, but that land did not forget it for many, 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 many years. This was 25 or 30 years ago.
Peter.
Yeah, when I understood it right, it was not a real sound, but it was a feeling that was in you. And I think Trees which are getting hurt, and when you cut them, they are not dead. The root system will stay alive for several years, and therefore I think your impression was right. Those trees or remnants of trees are always ongoing communicating, and when they are attacked by whom by whatever or whomever, they send out signals of stress. They send signals out of warning each other. In this case, that didn't make any sense. But those signals are in the air, chemical signals. And I think we have sensory possibilities, which are perhaps being a little bit lost from the past. Our ancestors had to know in which region it is good to settle and in which region it is not good to settle. And therefore, they were always interested in stable ecosystems. And an ecosystem where trees are warning each other is not a stable ecosystem, because those trees may break down because they are under attack by insects or whatsoever. And an ecosystem which is stable, which is in balance, won't send out such signals. So when a massive felling action is going on, yeah, I'm sure that the trees will send out signals and you can smell them. Not perhaps you are not conscious of this, but your instincts will recognize it. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I think what you felt had to do with this felling action. Mm.
Thank you so much, Gloria. Carol in Hazelhurst. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. I just have to say this is the most amazing conversation. Thanks for having it. I'm a tree hugger, and a good friend of mine is also, and we love to go to natural areas in Wisconsin, especially old growth forests. And we've noticed when we've been there, there is this profound calmness and peacefulness.
Yes.
There. We find that all of a sudden our voice is lower, and we want to walk softer. And we've been confused because in other woods and forests, we don't get that same feeling.
I think a lot of people know exactly what you're talking about.
We just have to wonder, is that because in these old growth forests, these trees are not feeling threatened by being violated and hurt by loggers?
That's exactly that. We have it in our own reservations. I have several visitors every 2 or 3 weeks, which are saying exactly the same. They come from our plantations, which we still have, or the remaining plantations, which we try to change. And they come in those old beech tree forests, which are thousands of years old, and they feel suddenly being at home. And they feel peaceful, and they don't they are not able to say why it is like this, but they feel it. And I think that's wonderful. Many people have the same feelings, and I think that's because those old growth forests are in a balance. They are undisturbed. They have their family bands. Yeah, maybe you can say they are happy.
Hmm. What are people thinking about you? Are you changing a lot of minds, people going with what you're saying now, or are some of your co-workers saying you're living in an alternate reality?
I think when you are, it depends who you ask.
I think
they will say I disturb their business. I think that's a fact. But usually people are happy with it because we have divided the nature into plants and animals, and this division is just because how they feed, but it has nothing to do with feelings, with memories, with families whatsoever. And I think we have to have a new look on plants, and especially on trees, because they have special social abilities. And that's what I want to have. I want that people look at plants, at trees, like plant elephants, like big elephants. And they are as wonderful as animal elephants. And they have the same family structures. They care, but they are so slow. And therefore, we fast being humans, haven't been able to recognize what's really going on, and that is now discovered, and so I want to share this with the people.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad you did, and you certainly have had a tremendous response to your sharing all of this. Peter, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah, thank you. Joining us by Skype, actually, from however the heck that works, from Germany, Peter Wohlleben, and his book is The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World. He has spent over 20 years working for the Forestry Commission in Germany. He left it to put his ideas about ecology into practice. He now runs an environmentally friendly woodland. He works for the return of primeval forests and has written other books, although none becoming bestsellers all over the world, as The Hidden Life of Trees. Well, that was fascinating, wasn't it? By golly. Thanks very much to K.P. Whaley and Scotty Myers for producing this program. Thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return and talk about the wonderful new production opening the season at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater is Man of La Mancha. And the star of the show will be with us hour two.